Epic. Book 1. Dawn of Destiny. Written by Lee Steven. Narrated by Patrick Quance. Chapter 0. Tuesday, March 29th, 0011, New Era. 2142 hours. Cleveland, Ohio, USA. It was a train wreck. A total train wreck. At least that's what ran through the mind of Colonel Brent Lyman, commanding officer of Falcon Platoon. His unit was dispatched in Cleveland. It was a familiar scenario. The Bachma had attacked, and the Earth Defense Network, Eden, had sent Falcon Platoon to defend the city. Only this time, it wasn't that simple. Buildings lay toppled across the street. Shattered cars littered the roads and sidewalks, and fresh craters lined what was once public square. Even worse, intelligence had been wrong about everything. The number of Bachma craft, the number of Bachma on the ground, everything. Even their maps were obsolete. The result was a Falcon Platoon bloodbath. Lyman epitomized an Eden veteran, a crew cut of steel-gray hair, a body tattooed with scars, and a penetrating glare that reflected a pessimistic wisdom about the reality of the alien war. Though unrecognized on the streets of the common man, the command staff at Richmond knew him well. If something needed to be done, Lyman could do it. He could do it better than most of them could. Plasma bolts whizzed past Lyman's head as he retreated around the corner of an alleyway. He flung himself against the brick and muttered a string of obscenities. It was time to pull out. It was time to salvage whatever was left of Falcon Platoon and return to base. The fate of Cleveland would rest in the hands of whoever else Richmond could muster up on a whim. Lyman loathed the Bachma more than any other species. They fought dirty. They fought like cowards. Crimson leather skin, bulging black eyes, and a mouthful of hideous teeth. He loathed the sight of them, almost as much as he loathed the stench of them. He reloaded his E-35 assault rifle and barked into his helmet comm.
Tacker, check that bank on the corner of Ontario and Rockwell. They've got a sniper up there somewhere. Flush him from behind if you can, but don't force it.
Confirmation came, and Lyland regripped his gun. There was no need to check on Tacker again. He'd do the job. He rounded the corner and spotted a handful of operatives hunkered down across the street. It took a moment for Lyland to realize they were the only other operatives left. One thought surfaced in his mind. Get them out of there. As they took cover behind an overturned van, he addressed his comm once more.
Who's still alive over there?
The comm channel crackled.
Me and Henrik, sir.
Who the hell is me?
Yalen, sir. Sorry.
Yalen and Henrik. It figured. At least Tacker was still alive. As if on cue, Tacker's voice sliced through the comm.
Sniper down.
Excellent. Everyone on headset, listen. Base is going to have to send someone else in to clean up this mess. Fall back to the safe zone.
Yalen and Henrik withdrew from the fight. Lyla looked skyward.
Seven, where are you?
7 in orbit, sir.
We're pulling an evac. Grab us at the safe zone.
On my way, sir.
The Vulture transport broke its low orbit over the city and pointed its nose toward the north. Ryland's focus returned to the street.
John, do you have a clear way out?
For the first time that mission, he called Tacker by his first name. An accident. Tacker's voice crackled again.
I don't know if I have the...
And that was it. There was a pop, and silence flooded the line. Tacker's voice was gone. Ryland froze.
Tacker? Tacker! 7, what was the...
He stopped as he watched a plasma bolt tear through Yalen's back. A mist of red erupted from the soldier's chest. He collapsed to the ground. Ryland continued.
7, what was the last known position of Commander Tacker?
Last comm was approximately 200 yards south of your location, sir.
Thank you, 7.
Too far to foot it. He scanned for an alternative, and he soon found one, parked right across the alley. A sedan. Perfect. He slammed the butt of his assault rifle against the driver's side window, and the glass shattered. It took just as much effort to hotwire it. The engine roared to life, and he floored the accelerator. Though an occasional plasma bolt flashed across the hood, Lylan reached Tacker's position with minimal resistance. As soon as he spotted Tacker, he knew why the signal had been lost. The sniper's helmet was attached to his belt, charred beyond functionality.
What happened?
Lylan asked as Tacker leapt inside. Tacker buckled up.
They had 2 snipers.
He ran a hand through his singed crew cut.
They just weren't very good.
Vulture 7 waited for them on its concrete perch. Only Henrik waited with it, a symbol of the mission's colossal failure. As Tacker abandoned the car and climbed aboard the blunt-nosed transport, Lylan offered the battle-torn streets of Cleveland one more gaze. A devastated city and a decimated unit. The price of underestimation. It all fell on him. Part 1, Chapter 1. Friday, April 1st, 0011, New Era, 2057 hours, Richmond, Virginia, USA. The door to room 419 slid open. Scott Remington stood in the doorway, staring inside. So this was it. This was home. This was where they had decided home was, anyway. His hazel eyes swept the room as he took it in. It was smaller than his room at the academy. It was more cramped. There were metal bunks pushed up against the right wall. These were smaller, too. He sighed and rubbed his hand behind his neck. This was all wrong. He wasn't supposed to be there. They had asked him if he had a geographic preference, and he'd told them Detroit Station. He had gone to school at Michigan. That's where she was. That's where he was supposed to go. When they'd handed him his duty assignment and he saw that it was Richmond, he couldn't believe it. He scratched his head, fingertips disappearing under his tuft of soft brown hair. Scott was 5 feet and 11 inches tall, with a body as toned as one would expect from a soldier fresh out of Philadelphia Academy. He was a handsome young man, or at least she thought so, and her opinion was the only one that mattered. He sighed again and took a step inside. It was done. He was officially there. He slipped the duffel bag from his shoulder and plopped it on the floor. Turning around, he stepped back to the door and eased it shut with a quiet click. He scrutinized the room again. A sink was built into the wall in the far corner, complemented by a small cracked mirror. Moving to the faucet, he turned the knob and an instant rush of water and steam poured out. He slid his hands beneath the stream and massaged his face, then patted his sleeve against his forehead and eyes and turned the water off. Returning to his duffel bag, Scott crouched down and tugged open the metal zipper. Inside was a collection of folded clothes, on top of which sat a black leather-backed scripture, the name Scott James Remington inscribed in gold at the bottom right-hand corner. He passed his hand along the book's glossy surface.
God, what am I doing here?
He took hold of the book and rose to his feet, placing it atop the nightstand next to the bottom bunk. The next item from the bag was a worn-out football, stained with grass and dirt from recent use. He gripped it for a moment before rolling it beneath the bed. His gaze returned to the bag where it lingered for a moment. Her. As much of her as there could be, anyway. It was the picture of a blue-eyed, beautiful brunette. Her smile caused two dimples to appear just beyond her lips, and her snow-white teeth sparkled from within the gold boundaries of the frame. His gaze trailed to the lower right corner, where the words, "I love you," were scripted in black marker. Beneath it was her name, Nicole. His focus returned to her face, and he breathed in softly. He hated Richmond even more. He rose and set the picture atop his nightstand, her face angled to the bed. For the next half hour, he removed clothes and unpacked the essentials. There was no hurry in the task, only the lull that came after the bustle of a move. As soon as he had finished, he turned off the lights and dropped down on the bottom bunk, sliding his hands behind his head. For the first time that day, his eyes fell shut. There was nothing more to do. Within minutes, he was asleep. The door swung open. A shaft of light cut in from the hallway, and Scott's eyes flickered awake. In the doorway stood the silhouette of a well-built man with a duffel bag similar to Scott's slung over his shoulder. His shoulders were broad, and though not massive, his stature made his power clear. Before Scott could gather his senses, the light flicked on, and the stranger stepped inside. He blinked as he saw Scott in bed.
"Sorry about that. Didn't expect anyone else to be here yet."
Scott flinched as the room lit up, and he propped up on his elbows. He mumbled incoherently as the stranger tossed his duffel bag onto the floor and extended a hand.
"Hey, David Jurgen."
David's features came into detail as Scott gave the hand an absent shake. Black hair was combed back on his head, and his casual green eyes made direct contact. Faint streaks of gray filtered past his sideburns. He offered Scott a genuine smile.
"I'm your roommate. Our convoy just got in from Philadelphia. Guess yours must have come early. Sorry about waking you up."
Squinting at the clock on his nightstand, Scott said,
"No, it's all right, man. What time is it?"
4:04.
"Oh, wow."
David knelt next to his duffel bag and unzipped it. He smiled.
"Yeah, the night's young."
He reached into the bag where he produced several pictures. He began to set them along the empty shelf space along the wall.
"Guessing if you had stuff, it'd be out by now. Mind?"
"No, not at all."
Only one picture of Scott's mattered, and it was already in place.
"What was your name again?"
I'm sorry. I'm still a little..."
"Out of it, yeah. You look it."
"Scott Remington."
"Scott Remington, huh? Well, good to meet you."
Scott nodded as his gaze fell on the pictures. There were several family pictures, but the ones that stood out showed David in full police uniform. Other uniformed men stood around him.
"You did police work?"
14 years, NYPD.
"Oh, wow. How..."
David continued to set the photos in place.
"I'm 40. Joined the department at 24. Did it for 14, then enrolled in Philadelphia. The math works."
Scott lingered on the pictures.
"Didn't see you at the academy."
"Well, it is pretty big."
"That's true."
And it was. In fact, the academy wasn't just pretty big. It was gargantuan. The only Eden bases that rivaled it were behemoths like Nagoya, Atlanta, and to an extent, Novosibirsk, the three largest facilities on Earth.
"We still probably had some of the same instructors, though."
"Oh, I'm sure. You ever had Captain Williams?"
Scott broke into a laugh. Captain Harold Williams, the man was a Philadelphia legend, a walking caricature of a drill sergeant.
"Yeah, I think everybody had Captain Williams. You had him for hand-to-hand training, right?"
"More like cadet beatdown training. You ever win?"
"Killed me every time."
"Yeah, same here."
David finished with the pictures and knelt beside his duffel bag.
"So what about you? Where'd you come from?"
Scott sat up, leaning against the lower bunk wall.
Lincoln, but I went to school at Michigan. I went to Philadelphia straight from there. Well, I didn't finish Michigan, left in my second year."
"Lincoln..."
"Nebraska."
"Why'd you leave school for this?"
Scott hated that question. The answer always sounded stupid. He hesitated for a moment before responding.
I guess I kind of felt led here. To Eden, I mean."
"What? Like a god thing?"
That was as good as he could have described it.
Yeah, I guess you could say that.
Okay, I respect that. I'm going to take a walk around, learn the layout of the base some. Want to come?
Scott smiled. He was glad the conversation deviated from religion so quickly. It was an awkward topic to begin a partnership with.
It's past midnight on the first night of the most important career decision of my life. Might as well wander around.
He rose from his bunk. He wasn't tired now anyway, and the sooner he could get the base layout down, the better. There were few things more pathetic than the look of a lost rookie. The light to room 419 flicked off, and the two men stepped into the hallway. Richmond was the smallest of the major Eden facilities on Earth. It was the only one classified as a Class 1. There were five classes in all, and each one represented the number of enlisted operatives. 11 of the facilities were considered major. Eden Command, Atlanta, Nagoya, Novosibirsk, Philadelphia, Richmond, Berlin, Dublin, London, Leningrad, and Cairo. There were hundreds of smaller Eden establishments across the planet, but they rated more as corner stations than military compounds. Despite its size, Richmond brandished a reputation for professionalism, and it was held in high regard by its counterparts across the planet. As the two men trekked through Richmond's corridors, they found sparse activity. There were occasional clusters of operatives in places such as the training center, but for the most part, the base felt asleep. With the traditional morning hours of Eden schedules, this was to be expected. The layout of the base was simple and effective, and within 45 minutes, they managed to venture through almost every allowable area. It was much smaller than Philadelphia Academy. Conversation flowed as David unfolded his story to Scott. He was married to his wife of 12 years, Sharon. They had two boys, both in grade school in New York. David's stint with the NYPD was a proud one, and he left with honorable notice to enroll with Eden. Sharon and the kids still lived in New York, though they were in the stages of a transplant to the city of Richmond to be closer to him. In turn, Scott told him about Nicole. The clocks peaked at 0100 when they finally returned to their wing of the living quarters. The hallways were vacant, and a stark silence reverberated from the walls. Because of this tomb-like state, they were able to spot with ease the faint glow of a light down the hallway. It was the only sign of life they'd come across. As they drew nearer, they realized that it emanated from the room just beside theirs, room 421. The closer they drew, the more apparent it became that a man stood in the doorway of the room, his shadow silhouetted across the linoleum floor. Once their footsteps were within earshot, the silhouetted man tilted his head in their direction. He was slender, though height compensated for a lack of size. His arms were folded across his chest as he leaned against the doorway arch, and his shadowed gaze scrutinized them beneath a tuft of dusty brown hair.
Who's that?
No idea.
Hey there!
Startled, the stranger shifted bodily to face them. Everything about the motion was uncomfortable, and his body language immediately withdrew. His gaze darted down to the floor, and he mumbled a response.
Howdy.
He had to be from Texas. The insignia on his uniform identified him as an Alpha Private, and David extended his hand.
David Juergen. I live next door.
Scott offered his hand immediately after.
Scott Remington, good to meet you. We're in 419.
The stranger shook Scott's hand tentatively. His discomfort was impossible to ignore.
All right,
the stranger said in a low voice. He looked young, barely in his 20s, if at all. Averting his eyes, he again shied toward the doorway.
I'm Jaden Timmons.
Jaden Timmons?
Yes, sir.
No, we just got here today, too. Away with the sir.
Jaden's posture eased at the revelation.
Us, too.
Who's us?
A new voice emerged from 421.
Hey, who's are you blathering with?
Scott and David exchanged a glance and then angled to the door. The accent was the first thing they heard.
Our neighbors.
Jaden answered the voice as he stepped to the side. Scott peered into the room. At the edge of the lower bunk sat a young man with an impish grin. His viridian gaze surveyed Scott beneath a scattered tangle of brown hair. As he kicked to his feet, one word came to Scott's mind. Energy.
Hi, Scott Remington. I live next door.
The newcomer slapped out a handshake.
Oh yeah, Deacon McRae. Likewise, it's a pleasure. You go by Remy.
Yeah, Remy works.
Remy actually worked well. A lot of his friends at Michigan called him that. It felt good to hear again.
Class, who you got with you?
David leaned inside and offered his hand.
David Jurgen. Good to meet you.
Beacon swatted David's palm.
Ye's muckers, eh?
We're roommates.
He could only assume that a mucker was a roommate, or a friend, or something along those lines.
Right, right, that's what I meant.
Despite the fact that Philadelphia was a melting pot for nationalities, the only Eden Academy on the planet, Scott had never met anyone from Ireland there. There were plenty of Americans, Britons, and Australians. The English speakers were undoubtedly the majority. Russia and Germany were also heavily represented, as were China and Japan. The rest of the global population, while still there, were far less common. David grinned.
Where are you from?
Broadford, Ireland. You really have to ask, do you?
Are you guys just in from Philadelphia, too?
We are. Guessing we're all alphas then, right?
Scott nodded as Jaden slipped back into the room. As soon as Beacon saw him, he said,
That's me boy OJ. He's a bit of a quiet one. He's one of them cowboys.
Jaden made for his bunk bed and snagged a brown cowboy hat from the bedstand. He placed it firmly on his head.
Jay's a sniper, he is.
You're a sniper?
Yeah.
That was impressive. He knew a few snipers in Philadelphia, and their training was to be envied. There was no such thing as a sniper with a poor work ethic.
Congratulations, man.
Thanks.
Meanwhile, Beacon's gaze shifted to David, where it lingered for several moments.
How old are ye?
Why?
You look older.
I'm 40.
That's why you look older.
How old are you?
A lot less old than you are.
Scott gave Beacon a hard stare. A question was lingering in his head, and he had to ask.
Why didn't you get stationed at Dublin?
That's a grand question. I've no bloody clue.
Scott laughed. Richmond didn't seem so far from home anymore.
And I thought being stationed outside of Michigan was bad. How does your family feel about this? They've got to be missing you like crazy.
I've got no family. Me ma and me dad died years ago. We've got no brothers or sisters.
Scott was oddly relieved by Beacon's answer. Scott had lost his parents too, back when he was in high school. They died in a car accident. It was always comforting to find someone else who knew what it was like to lose parents at a young age. He felt an unspoken connection with them.
What about you now? Leave anyone back in the great state of Michigan?
A fiancé and a brother. Mark lives in Nebraska, though.
Mark. He hadn't seen Mark in months. Scott was like a brother and father to him. Mark was still in his teens, but almost finished with high school. He planned to follow Scott's footsteps into Eden, no matter how hard Scott tried to talk him out of it.
So what about this girl?
Her name is Nicole. We've been together for 6 years. She came to Michigan with me. We dated in school and went to college together.
So you've been with this girl for 6 years, and you're not married yet?
We're engaged. Haven't really been able to set a date, though. I thought we'd be able to after the academy, but I didn't think they'd send me here. Believe me, nobody wants it to happen sooner than me.
A lot of people I knew in Philadelphia got married. Never understood that, I didn't. Get married in the middle of the academy. That place is hectic enough as it is.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I don't know how people had time to get hitched. Classes kept me busy around the clock.
It was an odd mix, Philadelphia. On one hand, it was military training. On the other, it was no different from college. In the midst of workouts, drills, and weapons training, there were courses. Classroom courses with names that sounded as if they came straight out of a university booklet. Geography 101, Urban Tactics, Environmental Combat 300. You didn't only graduate from the academy with a sense of accomplishment, you felt like you earned a college degree. Scott folded his arms contemplatively.
Do you guys feel like Philadelphia prepared you for this?
I think it did. I know a lot of people find it weird with the classes and everything, but everybody seems to come out all right.
It's different.
David stifled a yawn.
I know what they're trying to do. They're trying to create smarter operatives. And the best way to do that is through coursework combined with military training. It's a different system, yeah, but I think it works all right.
I bloody loved xenobiology.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Xenobiology alone made the academy worth it. There were few things more fascinating than the in-depth study of extraterrestrials. There were three alien species in all that had made contact with Earth, the Bachma, Ceratopians, and Itheni, and of course two animals in the Kanrasi and the Necrolid. It was startling how little Eden knew about each one outside of general biology. Their cultures, their relationships, and most notably their motives for attacking remained a mystery.
What was your favorite species?
I'd like to say Necrolids, but really, that class just scared the hell out of me. I like learning about the Ceratopians, though.
Ceratopians, the brutes of the alien war, like a page out of the prehistoric. Five-horned, bone-frilled warriors. Walking terrors.
Ceratopian class was good. You're right about the Necrolids, though they're pretty freaky. I think that's why people aren't as high on the class as you'd think, because as cool as they are, in the back of your mind you're thinking, Vec, I might have to fight that thing one day.
Yeah, exactly. Those things are scary as hell.
There was so much about the alien war that didn't make sense. In fact, there was next to nothing about it that made sense. Three species appeared at almost the exact same time. The grotesque Bachma, the reptilian Ceratopians, and the quintessentially gray Itheni. The Bachma and the Ceratopians seemed to have nothing in common, except for one detail. They both worked with the Itheni. The Itheni were present with both species, except in seemingly mundane roles. It wasn't clear whether they were supervisors or servants, or something else. Then there were the Kanrasi and the Necrolid, non-sentient alien animals. The Kanrasi, bear-like, spider-eyed beasts, were used by both the Bachma and the Ceratopians, either as mounted rides or animal labor. Necrolids were only seen with the Ceratopians. That was just as well, as Necrolids were generally regarded as the worst creatures imaginable. Black-skinned, sharp-clawed, long-fanged predators. Bugs with skin, with one horrible detail that stuck out from the rest. They were flesh-eaters. Why were the Itheni and Kanrasi connected to the Bachma and Ceratopians? Why weren't the Bachma and Ceratopians connected with one another? And why did only the Ceratopians use the Necrolid? They were all pertinent questions, but one question lingered above them. Why were they all after Earth? They appeared and attacked at the same time, within months of each other, without a clue as to their motives. Some media reporters nicknamed the alien war the Race for Earth, but nobody knew what was waiting at the finish line. Why were they here? It was a simple question, without a single answer. David pushed up from his chair. The other man turned to stare at him.
What's up?
Nothing. I think I'm just about to turn in, is all. I'm feeling that move from Philadelphia now.
Old people just get tired early.
David gave him a withering look, but the Irishman just laughed.
Fair enough, then. It was grand meeting you.
Scott sighed and lowered his head. Then he, too, stood up from his prop against the wall.
That's probably a good idea. Tomorrow's going to come fast.
You going to bed, too, then?
I don't want to be head-bobbing for whatever we have in the works tomorrow. I'm pretty sure that doesn't make a good first impression.
Yeah, right. Well, I'm sure we'll see us both tomorrow, then.
There's a good chance we'll all be in the same unit. They usually group teammates close together in the living quarters, and we're in the very next room.
That's true.
I guess we'll find out tomorrow.
Yeah.
Beacon plopped back down on his bunk and flung up a wave.
Night, Remy. Night, Dave.
Good night, guys.
Scott and David bid their farewells, stepped into the hall, and closed the door to 421.
Nice guys.
They seemed rather an odd couple, but he'd found them both friendly, in their own ways.
Yeah, unique little job of pairing Eden did there.
Yeah, really.
The door to 419 opened and they stepped inside. For the next several minutes, they prepared for the night. They took turns brushing their teeth at the sink, and then they slipped out of their jerseys and into nightwear. David climbed to the upper bunk as Scott flicked the light off from below.
Do you really think there's a chance we'll all be in the same unit?
I think there is.
I hope so. That'd be fun.
He closed his eyes. Silence hung in the room for several moments before David spoke.
Right. Because you know, Eden stands for Earth's Daily Entertainment Network.
Whatever. Good night. Earth's Daily Entertainment Network. I don't even know what that means.
Maybe you will soon. Good night.
Scott pulled the covers to his chin and turned over on his side. The initial uneasiness he'd felt had simmered down in his system. At least he had other people to share it with now. He looked forward to seeing Beacon and Jaden again. His mouth stretched open in a yawn, and he once again slid his eyes shut. Within minutes, he was asleep. Chapter 2. Saturday, April 2nd, 0011 New Era, 0545 hours. The next day. The door to General James Hutchins' room slid open as Leland stepped inside and paused at attention. Despite the fact that it was barely morning, Leland's uniform and crew cut were models of perfection. He gave the impression of a man who had been awake for hours. The door closed behind him, and Hutchin removed his reading glasses from his face.
At ease, Colonel.
The general was a well-structured man, younger than Leland, though his hair was streaked with dashes of gray. Leland's muscles relaxed.
Sir.
Have a seat, Brent. I'm sorry to hear about your platoon. A lot of good men were lost.
Yes, sir. A lot of good men were.
As you already know, this is war, and these things are unavoidable. That's why we don't make too many friends in this business.
Yes, sir.
And I have no doubts that you'll take your newly assigned crew and turn them into a platoon as functional as your last. Am I correct?
Yes, sir.
I expect no less.
Hutchin pushed back his chair and opened the topmost drawer of his desk. A single manila folder was produced, and he handed it across the desktop.
Here's your new crew, Colonel.
Did you take my recommendation to promote John Tacker to major?
I did. John's had a good career with us. I think he'll fit the role well. He was a good recommendation.
Thank you, sir.
Leland opened the manila folder and examined its contents. Hutchin's focus lingered on Leland's expression as it shifted from businesslike to confused, and finally to disbelief.
Sir, this has to be a mistake.
There's no mistake, Colonel. That's your new roster.
General, sir, this shows every single operative other than Tacker, Henrik, and myself as an alpha.
You are being assigned a rookie platoon.
Sir, Alan Henrik was an exception, but even he was a beta when he entered Falcon. Now, these are all alphas.
I understand, Colonel, but there is no mistake. That is your new platoon.
Permission to speak freely, sir?
Go ahead.
Falcon Platoon has a reputation to protect. We worked hard to earn it. It does the entire platoon a great injustice to replace those polished veterans with rookies straight out of the academy.
First of all, the we you're referring to consists of three people. The old platoon is gone.
Sir, I understand that,
but... Do you think rookies can benefit and learn from your example?
Sir, yes, sir, but I...
Then I expect you to do your job as colonel and lead this crew as you led the previous crew. I don't care about reputation. I care about results. I don't care if you were Klaus Ferber and this was Vector Squad. You'd still get a team full of rookies if that's all we had to choose from. We're undermanned. You know that. This is all we can afford to give you, and if we break up any other platoon further, we'll be jeopardizing their capabilities. That never has been acceptable, and it won't start being acceptable now.
I understand that, sir.
This is how it's going to be. When I make a decision, that decision is final. You know that. Now, you will take this team, and you will lead them as you led the Falcon platoon of yesterday. Take the assignment that's been handed to you and turn it into something to be proud of. Do what I've come to expect you to do. Make a bad situation good.
Leland opened his mouth to reply, but no words came out. The decision had already been made, and the word trainer hovered in his mind. The room fell quiet, and he sighed surrender.
Yes, sir.
Is there anything else?
No, sir.
Excellent. Your operatives have been notified and will meet in the hangar for your formal introduction at noon. I'm sure you'll have no trouble breaking them in.
Leyland closed the manila folder and stood up.
No, sir. If there's nothing else?
Nothing else. You're dismissed.
Thank you, sir.
Leyland nodded to the general, turned around, and left the room. It wasn't until 0950 hours that Scott, David, Beacon, and Jaden awoke from their slumber, a luxury they would not experience again for some time. It was a well-known fact that Eden thrived on morning schedules. There was a saying that passed on from each graduating academy class to the next, "Use your first day as an operative to sleep late. It may never happen again." It was advice that few Philadelphia graduates neglected. The four men went directly from their rooms to the cafeteria, where they discovered the vast difference between food services at the academy and food services in the real Eden. It was the difference between gourmet and cheap as possible. This was not a surprise. The academy was designed to be reassuring on many levels. Once potential recruits became Eden cadets, the pampering at the academy began. Private rooms, fine cuisine, and a university atmosphere came together to form a grand scheme. Convince them that Eden was the right move, and when reality hit, they'll have gone too far to turn back. For a vast majority of those enlisted in Philadelphia, the plan worked. Only 8% dropped out before graduation. When they returned to their rooms, they discovered that notes had been pushed under their doors. The notes bore simple instructions: report to the hangar at 1200 for unit assignment. On time is late. With little time to spare, they opted to dismiss further conversation and don their uniforms. By the time 1150 came around, all four were prepped and ready for the meeting. Together, they ventured to the hangar. Though the Richmond main hangar was spacious, it paled in comparison to the massive hangars found at larger bases. Nonetheless, the four soldiers found themselves transfixed on the ceiling, if for nothing more than to feel the awesome depth of the room. Vulture transports and Vindicator fighters covered the ground space in neat rows, and mammoth Grizzly APCs, armored personnel carriers, sat parked in preparation for a mission. The mere sight of them broke goosebumps across their arms and sent forth a powerful, overwhelming sensation. The extraterrestrials had picked the wrong planet to fight. It was no challenge to locate the intended meeting area, as several perfect rows of steel chairs lined the center of the hangar. Scott guessed that there must have been at least 40 of them. They were almost all full, occupied by various men and several women, all of whom chattered in hushed tones with one another as their gazes occasionally roamed the room. At the front of the rows stood an empty olive-colored podium. There was a cluster of empty chairs at the back of the seating area, and the four soldiers were quick to stake their claim. As they took their seats and listened, they could overhear parts of conversations taking place around them. Introductions, comments on the size of the hangar and the taste of the cafeteria food, all small talk. It was familiar conversation to the four, and Beacon was the first to point out why. Everyone in the hangar was an Alpha private. At that point, a new sound presented itself, the sound of footsteps. The steps were no louder than any of the conversation in the hangar, and no more unusual. They stood out because of their perfect synchronicity. Three pairs of feet, one unified sound. A glance toward the hangar entrance explained why, as the three men made their approach. The man in the forefront was older, with cropped silver-gray hair. As he neared, there was no doubt as to his level of authority. He carried himself like a commanding officer. The second man was younger, taller, and steel-faced. His posture was perfectly erect, and he walked in total harmony with the older man in front of him. Of the three, he was the only one with a folder in hand. The last man was the shortest and sported a mop of short, curly brown hair. It was easy to identify the status of these men. They were all officers. Immediately, every operative in the seating area snapped up and rose their hands to their foreheads in attention. A cloud of anticipation could be sensed rising from the floor. The older man continued his purposed march past the soldiers until he came to the podium in front of the seating area. When he placed his palms at its edges, it wobbled back and forth. He grimaced.
Get this piece of crap out of my sight.
The curly-haired officer nodded, took the podium aside, and returned. The older man cleared his throat and settled his eyes on the throng of Alpha privates.
At ease, everyone. I am Colonel Brent Leyland. To my right is Major John Tacker, and the other officer with us is Lieutenant Alan Henrik. The three of us make up the command staff of Falcon Platoon. If you haven't put it together yet, we are your new commanding officers. As you may have noticed already, you are all Alpha privates. You are all fresh out of Philadelphia. That's not typical for a unit of this caliber. In order to fully explain the special situation we're in, I must first briefly explain a bit of history behind this platoon. Falcon Platoon is one of the oldest platoons at Richmond. It's been here since the base's establishment, and I have been her commanding officer for just as long. We have had a long and outstanding tradition of experience and leadership, and we're one of the most respected units at this base. Unfortunately, change has been forced upon us. Several days ago, the whole of Falcon was lost in Cleveland, Ohio. This loss was not due to failure on the part of Falcon, but due to a combination of events that could be best summed up as bad luck. As you'll learn, those things happen. Unfortunately, you can't rewind and change it. You can only hope to better prepare for the future. Richmond is the smallest Eden facility on Earth. We don't receive nearly the number of new operatives as other stations do. In short, this facility is undermanned, and you are all we have to fill the shoes of those lost in battle.
The words were inspirational murder. The eager expressions on the Alphas fell. The cloud of anticipation evaporated.
That's why you're here now. That's not what you want to hear. It's not what I want to see. But that's how it is. Now, you can handle this in two ways. You can tuck your tails between your legs and prove my gut right, because my gut tells me that everything this unit's worked toward has just come crashing down. Or you can prove me wrong. I hope, for all of our sakes, that you prove me wrong. Because if you don't, this is a sad day for the state of Eden.
Tacker frowned as Leyland continued.
This isn't a traditional war we've been faced with. This is a war unlike any we've ever seen. It's a war in which we can't choose the battlegrounds we fight on. It's a war in which we don't have the luxury of going on the offensive. An attack can happen anywhere on the planet, at any time. It's impossible to form coherent battle plans, since we never know what the battlefield will look like until we step off the transport. You can go from asleep in your beds to the middle of a firefight in minutes. Deaths are inevitable. My job as your commanding officer is to make sure your chance of dying by your own mistakes is diminished. And it's your job as my operatives to help me reach that goal by paying attention, following orders, and working as a team.
Scott laughed beneath his breath. Nice way to motivate a unit.
I won't say what I look forward to, because it's not a very long list. I will say this, however. 5, 6, maybe 7 of you will impress me. I look forward to finding out who they are.
If a feather would have fallen, everyone in the hangar would have heard it. Silence hung in the air until Leyland's voice once again subdued it.
I will now turn this over to Major Tacker.
All attention shifted to Tacker as he took Leyland's place. He offered the Alphas a faint smile as he cleared his throat.
Good afternoon, Falcons. As the Colonel stated, my name is John Tacker, and I'm the executive officer of this platoon. I will be directly leading Charlie's squad, and Lieutenant Henrik, right here behind me, will be in charge of Delta squad. Despite the fact that we're all one platoon, a majority of your work will be with your assigned squad. I have the squad rosters right here.
He opened a manila folder.
When I call your name, please stand up, step to the far right. I'll meet you there shortly. This is for Charlie's squad. Bell, Carter, Jurgen, Mathis, McCray, Remington, Rhodes, Timmons, Valor, Ziegler.
Scott grinned as he, David, Beacon, and Jaden made their way to the side. So they had been right yesterday. They weren't only in the same platoon, they were in the same squad. Despite the severity of Leyland's opening welcome, Scott felt a sense of anticipation.
The rest of you, the majority, have been assigned to Commander Henrik. He'll speak with you now.
Tacker nodded to the curly-haired Henrik, who took his place in front of the seating area. As Henrik began to speak, Tacker stepped away from him and joined the operatives assigned to Charlie's squad.
You all will be directly under my supervision as long as you're part of Charlie. Charlie's always been a bit more specialized than Delta, which is why they have more than we do. You're rookies, but you won't be held to a rookie standard, though I'm sure the Colonel's already made that clear. I'm a bit more patient than the Colonel. I was where you were, and so was he, even though he'll never admit it. Contrary to popular belief, he actually wasn't born in an Eden uniform.
Scott chuckled, as did several others around him.
I do expect great things. I demand great things. There's a learning curve, and I understand that. But the Bacma don't and the Ceratopians don't, not even the Athene. They don't care if you've been with the organization for 20 years or 20 minutes. They still won't hesitate to shoot you in the back of the head if they get the chance. Now, it's vital to our survival as a squad that we communicate. Communication is the deciding factor in combat. A lot of that comes with familiarity. That said, I'd like to take a few minutes for each of us to introduce ourselves. We can do that since we're a relatively small group. Be brief as possible, but give us something to remember you by. But before we do that, does anyone have any questions?
A lanky, blonde-haired soldier raised his hand.
Go ahead.
Thank you, sir. I was just wondering, why were we chosen for Charlie instead of Delta, sir?
Scott wondered the same thing. It was a legitimate question. Tacker smiled.
Well, your academy records have shown you to have more potential than most. That means a variety of different things, from physical skill, willingness to follow orders, examination scores, all those factor in. The goal is to have enough variety in the squad to cover all bases without letting one area slip. Academy scores mean nothing compared to true combat experience, but it gives us a sort of a best guess. Hopefully, we evaluated correctly. If we were wrong in our evaluation, you will be removed. Any other questions? Very good. As I mentioned before, I'd like each of us to give a brief introduction. Give us something to identify you with other than your name. I'll go ahead and go first, that's only fair. My full name is John Noah Tacker. I entered Eden as a sniper, and I've been one ever since. I'm a 6-year veteran of the organization. I was a tertiary officer for Falcon Platoon before Cleveland, and I was promoted to major today, actually. This is my first command assignment. So that's all I want from you. Let's go ahead and start to the left and work our way to the right until everyone's done. Go ahead.
The first person to Tacker's left was a petite black woman. Her hair was tied back in a delicate bun, and she offered warm brown eyes and a smile to the group.
Hi, everyone. My name is Sasha Rhodes, and I'm a combat medic. I'm 22, and I'm very glad you're our commanding officer, sir.
The group laughed. Compared to the bitter greeting of Colonel Leyland, Major Tacker's laid-back persona was a relief to everyone. Tacker smiled and shook his head.
Thank you, Miss Rhodes. I am sure you are.
The next operative down was the only other woman in the group. Her fiery red hair was pinned back in a bushy ponytail, and her striking green eyes glinted at Tacker.
My name is Natasha Valor, and I'm also a combat medic. I'm not sure if this is something to remember me by, but I was actually from Philadelphia. The city, I mean. I literally lived about a 15-minute drive from the academy.
So, our two medics are Sasha and Natasha. That's wonderful. As you can all see, we don't have any veteran medics on this squad. That's not a typical situation, but as you know, Falcon Platoon isn't a typical situation. I expect a lot out of you two.
Scott restrained a frown and made a mental note not to get shot. The next man down the row was tall and broad-shouldered. His height was rivaled only by David's and surpassed only by a giant black man farther down the line. He had piercing green eyes beneath a jet-black crew cut.
I'm Michael Carter, and I'm a soldier. I used to bounce in Urban Rodeo. I don't know if anyone's familiar with it, but it's a club in Oakland.
The black man farther down grinned.
Oh, man, I've been there once. Place is hip.
You can't even imagine, man. I've had to bust out so many people. I'm talking on a nightly basis. Just stupid people. They can't behave.
I believe it.
Silence prevailed, and Scott cleared his throat.
Scott Remington. I'm 23 and a soldier. I used to be QB for Michigan before I joined Eden.
David, who was next in line, raised his brow and stared at him.
Yeah, I was a bobcat. I only had 4 starts. I was second string for most of my time there.
How'd you do?
I went 2-2.
And it should have been 3-1. Poor receivers were the banes of decent quarterbacks. It was funny how Scott's mind could go back so easily. He remembered every drop back as if he just returned to the huddle. David stepped forward.
David Juergen. I spent 14 years with the NYPD before this. Married man, wife, and 2 great kids.
He nodded toward Sasha and Natasha.
Sorry, ladies, I'm taken.
Sasha laughed. Natasha offered him a coy smile. Tacker canted his head and hesitated.
How old are you, Juergen?
Scott tried and failed to restrain his smile. Poor David. He was never going to get away from his age here.
40, sir.
14 years in the NYPD and 40 years old? Why didn't you come in as a gamma private?
Wasn't offered, sir.
Wait a sec. Philadelphia never opted you into that?
No, sir. I asked about it. They said no. They told me that defending a city and defending a planet were 2 different things altogether.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is what happens when stupid people get to make decisions. We'll get you where you belong as quickly as we can.
Thank you, sir.
Beacon was the next to step forward. His impish smile was still plastered across his face. Scott couldn't help but laugh silently. Beacon reminded him of the kind of mischievous troublemaker that people actually wanted to be around.
Beacon McRae, from Broadford, Ireland. As class as it'd be for me to fancy up something to remember me by. I think me accent will do well enough. And if that doesn't work for you, wait till you see me dance.
Scott closed his eyes and laughed along with the group. Beacon was something else. Jaden was the next man in line. Only after the group fell silent for several moments did he conjure up his words.
My name is Jaden Timmons, and I'm 22. I'm from Blue Creek, Texas, and I'm a sniper.
And that was it.
Congratulations. Sniper's the most important man on the battlefield. And of course, I'm not biased at all.
Thank you, sir.
Only 3 more men remained. The lanky, blonde-haired man who had raised his hand earlier, the titan of a black man, and a smaller-framed individual with spiky black hair. The blonde one cleared his throat.
My name is Henry Mathis, and I'm 25. Before I joined Eden, I spent 4 years as a talk seller.
Scott's stomach twisted. A talk seller. The most irritating kind of person on the planet. It didn't matter where you were. When you saw a talk seller, you turned and walked the other way. Their name said it all. They talked until they sold, or until whoever they talked to told them off and ran. But that posed the question, what on earth was a talk seller doing in Eden? No comments were made to Henry. After several moments of uncomfortable silence, the giant black man drew a breath.
I'm Donald Bell. I'm a demolitionist. Ain't nothing else I can think to say. I'm the only big black man here. Y'all probably gonna remember that fine.
It was true enough.
I played football too, though. O-line. I blocked for my cousin in high school.
Scott smiled.
You're my new best friend.
The last man, though small, was well-defined. His blue eyes iced over the rest of Charlie's squad. Scott recognized the expression right away. Superiority.
David Ziegler. I'm a soldier. And I've been involved in military training my entire life.
He said nothing else, despite the unfinished silence that lingered around him. Tacker finally spoke and reestablished control.
All right, good job, everyone. That's all I wanted from you. I can't stress how important it is that all of you bond, and quickly. If I didn't think it was important, I wouldn't have bothered with this. Friendship, as silly and cliched as it might sound, could be the only thing that keeps you alive. It's amazing what you can do when you know someone's got your back. Now, I'm going to dismiss you, because I'm sure some of you still need to get acclimated to the base. This is a different world from the academy, so take some time to get used to it.
A sporadic chorus of yes, sir, answered him.
There's a box by the hangar door you came through. In that box, you'll find your personal comms. Find the one with your name on it. Those are to follow you wherever you go. Sleep with it. Eat with it. Shower with it. Do everything with it. When those comms go off, it's time to do your job. We have a 5-minute rule in Falcon Platoon. When your comm goes off, you have 5 minutes to get from wherever you are into uniform and in the hangar ready to go. The transport Charlie uses is Vulture 7. It's right over there.
He motioned toward one of the transports in the hangar. The number 7 was clearly visible on its dorsal fin.
You were all fitted for personal combat armor in the Academy. That gear, along with your weaponry, will be housed in Vulture 7. There's a locker for each of you in it. You'll typically get suited up en route to your destination. 5 minutes, people. Never longer. Understood?
They acknowledged, and Tacker snapped a stern command of attention. After a moment of stillness, he nodded a final time.
All right, you're dismissed.
As Tacker returned to Leyland's side, the operatives retrieved their comms and began to file out of the hangar. Henrik continued to speak with Delta as Leyland and Tacker observed in silence. Leyland shifted his attention to the operatives of Charlie's squad as they departed.
So what did you think of them?
I hope they know what this is about. I don't know what I can think at this point.
Did you open informally?
Yes, sir.
You know I hate that.
I know. But it's important that they bond quickly. That might be the only thing that saves them when the fighting starts. I mean, they sent us a talk cellar for crying out loud.
The last of the Charlie squad operatives left the hangar.
Who do you think has potential?
I think Jurgen will do well. He should have come in as a beta at the lowest. Bell, Carter, Ziegler, maybe. I'm anxious to see what Timmons can do. There are a few that have potential, I think.
Any foreseen problems?
Aside from the talk cellar, that's Mathis. I don't know. Nothing's glaring. It's just an experience.
I'm not fond of 2 girls making up your medical crew.
Yeah, I'm not either. But what can we do? We take what they send us. I'm glad Henrix has a medic with high marks, at least.
The only thing he's missing is a clue. You know what I want you to do, right?
Yes, sir, I do.
The chaff will show, given time and an opportunity.
Tacker only stared ahead. They remained in the hangar for several more minutes as Henrik continued to address Delta Squad. Once Henrik had concluded and dismissed his operatives, Leyland offered a cordial nod of departure to Tacker. It was returned, and Leyland stepped away. Tacker remained behind only for a minute as Delta's soldiers retrieved their comms and made their own exits. He left shortly after, and the hangar was abandoned.